You're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Season 2, Episode 5 of Commentary, Trek Stars, a show which deals with the work of Star Trek creators outside of Star Trek. I'm Mike.
I'm Max.
And today is part 5 in our series on Nicholas Meyer as a director, and we're looking at his fifth movie, The Deceivers. And today we're joined by Marcelo Pico of Framed Panda. How's it going, Marcelo?
It's going very well.
All right. So what exactly is Framed Panda?
Framed Panda is a little production company in Austin, Texas. We do small videos for businesses and short movies, too. And yeah, I try to write some reviews on the website and always on Twitter, just expressing my love of movies. So that's Framed Panda in a nutshell.
Cool. And people can find that at framepanda.com, is that right?
Yes, that's the site.
All right, cool.
How did you come up with the name Framed Panda? Was it from like a story where like a zoo had like a murder and the panda had blood on its hands, but he didn't really do it?
No, we need a good logo like that.
Cool. It's got an endearing quality and also indicates structure.
Right.
So, since this is a Star Trek show, we always ask people what their relationship with Star Trek is, and I know that yours is rather interesting. From, you know, following you on Twitter and stuff, I know that you're a really big fan of The Wrath of Khan. Is that correct?
Good choice.
Yes, really, really big.
Like one of your favorite movies?
I can't remember how many times I've seen it now. I've seen it many times. And in the past 2 weeks, with the release of the new one, the Into Darkness, I saw Wrath of Khan again, and it cemented it as one of my top movies of all time, which surprised me a little bit, but really, it's that fantastic.
It's true.
That I can all see. That's not weird to me at all. What is a bit strange to me, not in like a judgmental way, but just as in a really bizarre way, is that up until like last week, you had never seen Search for Spock, right?
Oh, right.
I wish I could say that.
And I figured out why I sort of, because I had a big, I got into Star Trek fairly recently, a few years ago. And I watched a lot of the original series episodes, and I got started on the movie series, Motion Picture, which was, you know, it was the motion picture. And then I got into Wrath of Khan, and I fell right in love. And for, I guess, it was a perfect movie in that I almost didn't want it, I didn't want the story to continue. So I sort of stopped myself there. It's like, I know there are others, but I'm so in love with Wrath of Khan, I that would be just it for me, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does make sense, especially considering what happens in Search for Spock and how...
And considering that was Nicholas Meyer's damn point.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Nicholas Meyer didn't do Star Trek III because of the same reason that you didn't watch Star Trek III. So that is really interesting. But now that you've seen Search for Spock, what do you think about it?
It's not as... Because I've heard bad things. I mean, it's not as bad as some people... say it is. It's a decent Star Trek movie. But yeah, the continuation of the Spock storyline, I would have been fine if they let it be. You know, in the Wrath of Khan.
Have you gone on to watch Star Trek 4, 5, and 6 or not?
Not yet. Not 4. 4 is on the list of my movies to see. I've seen 1 or 2 of the Next Generation movies. I just saw First Contact for the first time. Like 2 weeks ago, so that's like my first foray into Next Generation. So that one I really liked.
Have you seen Star Trek VI, Nicholas Meyer's other one?
He just said he hasn't.
No, he said he hadn't seen all of them. But have you seen Star Trek?
No, I haven't seen that one yet.
All right, well, check that one out for sure. It's really, yeah, really good, obviously. All right, well, today's movie is The Deceivers, and it was released in 1988. It stars Pierce Brosnan, and it was written by Michael Hurst, who at this time, that was his first screenplay, but he has since gone on to write the Elizabeth movies, as well as create The Tudors, Camelot, and Vikings for TV. And it was produced by Ishmael Merchant of Merchant Ivory Productions. So just to give you a basic synopsis. Oh, it was based on a 1952 novel by John Masters.
Which was sort of based on real events.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So just to give a brief synopsis, Pierce Brosnan plays a British officer in Victorian India who discovers the Tuggy cult, a band of thieves and murderers who worship the goddess Kali. And they're known as the Deceivers. That's where the title comes from. And he goes undercover to infiltrate the cult in an effort to stop them. So, Marcella, what did you think about the movie?
Well, it wasn't what I expected. Considering it being a Merchant Ivory movie, I expected to be basically, I was telling somebody else this, it ended up being kind of like a Serpico via like a Merchant Ivory movie, which surprised me of going undercover to basically overthrow these Tuggies. It was interesting at that point, and overall I like really enjoyed it actually.
What about you, Max?
It is very weird how much like an undercover cop joins a gang and then his loyalty is questioned kind of narrative it is. That was odd because knowing the history of the times, I couldn't imagine that this guy would, you know, join this gang, become so one of them, and then go on to lead a like Salem-esque hunt to kill all of them and as many of them as possible. But in a way, it makes sense. I mean, you know, it's psychologically scarring him so that he then has to compensate for the rest of his life.
Yeah. I personally wasn't very impressed by it. I didn't really buy the character's arc that much, and I didn't really find the story on the whole to be that compelling. I did think it was interesting, you know, looking at it in terms of Meyer's other work, how photographically it was very different from his other movies. He used the camera, I think, in ways that he had never done before, and I was actually very impressed by that. And I also thought that Pierce Brosnan's performance was really good. But on the whole, I think it's one of Meyer's lesser works. So,
sure.
Yeah.
But it's still better than most Merchant Ivory movies.
I mean, that could be. Yeah, and that is weird. That it's
a Merchant. Cut it some slack.
I mean, that's true. And it's weird that it's a Merchant Ivory movie. I don't know.
Yes,
like,
it's very weird.
For one thing, it's weird that Ivory didn't direct it. You know, I wasn't really aware of that, you know, that stuff was happening. But also, you know, yeah, just the idea that, like, they'd bring in someone like Nicholas Meyer, you know, like, they'd watch, like, Volunteers in the day after or whatever, time after time, and be like, this is our guy.
But if you watch interviews with him or, like, read anything from him, he uses history constantly in everything. He's sort of...
That's true.
He's as obsessed with periods as Merchant Ivory Productions in general.
Mm-hmm.
So it would make sense if, you know, somebody from the production company met Nicholas Meyer and they were like, you know that story, that weird undercover cop, but he's, you know, working for the East India Trading Company? What if this guy got it because he knows everything about the past? He's working on a book where a guy steals rubber trees.
That's true. The rubber tree
it's
book.
It's exactly like this.
Yeah. What was the name of the book?
Black Orchid?
Black Orchid. Yeah, which was a novel that Meyer wrote, I guess, like 6 years prior to this, or more than that, I think.
Indiana Jones and the Rubber Tree Plant.
Exactly. And it was very similar to this. It involved, you know, like, you know, colonists coming in and taking over. Yeah, I mean, it's strange how similar that it was. And it was also, you know, a fictionalization of, you know, like, to me anyway, obscure events that occurred, you know, in the 1800s. So I guess that's his thing. He's a really big fan of the 1800s, what with the Sherlock Holmes and everything.
Well, I mean, it's a really well-documented era.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's harder to do a story set in the 1400s because you've only got, like, you know, like, weird smattering constellation of data, whereas the 1800s was fairly well-documented.
Even though it is definitely a Meyer movie, it does feel like... I mean, I know this is going to sound weird because it's exactly what it is, but it feels like what a Meyer movie would be if it was produced by Merchant Ivory. You know what I mean?
No, that's crazy. What you're saying makes no sense.
Okay. I'm just saying, like, and this is something which I didn't know, was that the original goal of Merchant Ivory Productions was to make English language movies set in India. Mm-hmm. Which they're not really known for that now. They're known for, like, you know, movies that take place in, you know,
period pieces,
Edwardian,
yeah,
you know, England,
but like almost invariably
with Anthony Hopkins
in another country,
Emma Thompson. I mean, I guess so.
I mean, it's almost always in another country. It's you know, I can think of one that wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's weird, but in some ways, this is a lot more like in keeping with their
merchanty
original
and ivory.
Yeah, merchanty especially is a lot more in keeping with their original goal than the stuff that they're known for. So that's mm-hmm. interesting. From what Meyer says in his book, working with Merchant Ivory wasn't exactly the most pleasant experience in the world because Merchant was essentially absent throughout the entire production.
Yeah.
He was in his office. He was a producer in the same way that, you know, I imagine George Lucas was a producer on the Star Wars sequels where he was sort of managing from afar. And
at the same time, did a lot of work before you even arrived.
Right, yeah.
Whereas I don't know if Merchant so much did that.
That I don't know. But he also talked about how, you know, there were lots of times where, you know, getting Merchant to pay the bills was a bit of an effort, but, you know, in the end it all worked out. There was also a whole big dispute, sounded like basically a labor dispute with the... going
like the
on.
Locals thing?
Yeah, with the locals, and they would constantly try to interrupt the production. They would parade through, you know, while they were shooting. They would steal...
That is shockingly common.
...key components from the equipment and
I
whatnot.
Remember him saying in the book something like, some guys, some of the locals, were really...
Well...
...bags. But the people I was working with were super great.
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty much what he says. He was constantly impressed by the crew, but... Well, as far as the history behind the story is concerned, you know, this is something which did happen to some extent. I mean, the characters are fictional, but the Tuggies were a real life.
That's debatable.
Group of something, maybe. I don't know.
There's a significant like modern debate as to whether or not the Tuggies were a real thing,
or if it was just something created by, you know, the British in order to try to control the...
It doesn't need to be created by the British because the colonial atmosphere, the colonial mindset was that these people are primitive wackos. And if there's a gang of killers out there, you will assume that they have some sort of like guiding ideology when it seems plausible, if not more likely than anything else, that they were just gangs.
I mean, that could be too... Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know
any of that, apparently, but the history is that a lot of those guys had no affiliation with Kali. They were not particularly religious people. They just were in the gang because it was profitable.
Mm-hmm. Well, Tuggy is the Hindu word for thief. Mm-hmm. And these guys, according to at least the way it's written, is these guys operated primarily from, like, 1740 to 1840. And in that time, they are estimated to have killed 1 million people. And basically, you know, they would go befriend some people, be like, hey, you know,
at the same time,
this is great.
At the same time, lumping them all into that one thing is erroneous
is
because
probably,
they
yeah.
were bajillions of individuals.
Right.
A whole bunch of little gangs.
Mm-hmm.
One random killer who, you know, who strangles a dude and takes his money. People would say that that was a thuggy attack,
mm-hmm.
when it was really just a mugger.
Right. So in 1830, the British military basically wanted to wipe them out. You know, I mean, even in the movie, I think they used the word eradicate, which is
well, I think at
pretty
this time,
harsh.
I think at this time, they're not technically British military. Technically, they're private industry.
No, I think it was the British military.
But it's the East India Company, which has British military protection, but they're not... Like, technically, they're company officers.
I don't know. I don't know. I'm just reading saying what I read on Wikipedia, and you know Wikipedia is never okay. wrong about anything. yeah, you know, they tried to wipe them out, and the effort was led by this guy named William Henry Sleeman, who was the basis for Pierce Brosnan's character, you know, William, I think his name is William Savage in the movie, right? Yeah. I don't know if he went undercover or any of that stuff, but, you know, he was sort of like the guy. Sleeman, there's another interesting fact about him. He was the first person to discover dinosaur fossils in Asia.
I did not know that.
That he did that like a couple years before he started killing Tuggies. So that's like, I mean, I'm thinking prequel, right? I mean, did you guys know anything about, I mean, like Marcella, did you know anything about the Tuggies prior to this or not?
Oh, I
knew
nothing. I knew very little. To say that this movie is informative of the period after, you know, all that you said, like the movie doesn't portray that. The movie just says like they do these ritualistic murders and they have to all be wiped out. It sort of skews to, you know, pro English, stereotypes, if that makes sense. I mean, I feel like I should read more about the Tuggies and sort of not base all my knowledge of them on just this movie.
Yeah, that's
you
true.
Can throw Temple of Doom in there.
Yeah, I was
that rounds
say,
it out nicely.
Temple of Doom.
Yeah, I mean, like Temple of Doom, and you know, I was reading about that, like, because like I thought the whole controversy behind Temple of Doom was that they made this stuff up, and I mean, obviously, like the portrayal.
No, the problem is that they were going with a narrative that was, in a lot of people's minds, made up.
Like, okay, I mean,
that's the problem that people had with it, because like it was, I mean, like it's a weird sort of racism,
mm-hmm.
but that's what it is. It's like there are these primitive people. Let's lump them all into one category so that we don't have to think about it anymore. They're in a cult, and they worship a god of destruction. And if you study Hinduism for 4 minutes, you see that Kali is much more complicated than the devil.
Right.
And has a lot of positive aspects to her character, but you know, if you're a Victorian Englishman and you hear like goddess of destruction, you're like, goddess destruction, those are both bad things.
Mm-hmm.
So you become sort of you get lumped into a sort of racist category instantly when you start talking about this, and that was the problem people had with Temple of Doom, because it was buying into that narrative. The problem is that like there probably were instances of legitimate cult behavior. There's certainly evidence that there were at least a few straight up cults. And to fictionalize one and say that they had magical, you know, capabilities because they had supernatural rocks, that doesn't seem that far. Mm-hmm. Considering that in the previous movie he found the Ark of the Covenant and it was filled with supernatural ghosts.
Based on what, you know, I've read and what this movie, you know, shows, like, even if, like, that this movie's portrayal of the Thuggies is, you know, based on what, you know, the British sort of said they were or mm-hmm. whatever, I mean, that doesn't seem to have much to do with what Spielberg was portraying them as in Temple of Doom, you know?
Well, no.
I didn't see any, like, you know,
there's a reactionary
child slave labor.
There's a reactionary component to any sort of, like, moral outrage when something deals with, like, race and history,
well,
and
no,
especially
well, no.
and even
I
genocide.
Mean, yeah.
So, like people are reacting not so much to, like, what they saw, but, like, they're not representing the positive side of things. They're buying into the negative stereotype,
well, yeah.
which is a legitimate problem.
Well, no, I'm not saying that. It's not. I'm just saying like it like Temple of Doom's portrayal of the thug. It's almost like they took the name
mm-hmm.
and Kali, and then built their own fake cult out of it.
They didn't so much make anything up as they did sort of like blow it up into much larger numbers.
I guess
like,
so, but like the
saying,
whole
like, slave labor, everyone did that.
Okay,
and child abduction, yeah, they totally did that. And to say that they were a legitimate cult, probably. To say that like they had magic rocks, probably not. But I mean, let's say there are magic rocks. Let's say the cult got some. It doesn't seem all that implausible.
Speaking of which, magic rocks and whatnot. In this movie, did you guys? There's the whole thing about, you know, where the dude tells Pierce Brosnan, like, don't eat the sugar or else you'll be in Kali's hold and stuff.
Yeah.
And then he eats the sugar because he's like, screw this. And then he starts, you know, sort of like becoming, you know,
and then Short Round hits him with the torch and he comes back. And then he's fine.
Do you think that the implication there was that there was some sort of supernatural power behind it, or do you think that was just him thinking, like, you know, second guessing himself and thinking, like, is this for real? Because I'm kind of freaking out here. Because it seems a very non-Meyer thing to do. But it really seemed like that was the direction they were going in for a while. What did you think, Marcelo?
Yeah, I wasn't sure what to think about those.
I mean, going back to Temple of Doom, I mean, that's kind of what I pictured. Like, it's some sort of, I thought it was like some sort of like drug that they all took, sort of just to sort of get over their, I guess, fear, not fear, but sort of like wash away their morals. It's how I took it.
I think that the implication is that there's a supernatural component.
Yeah, I mean, like, what you're saying makes sense, but then just thinking about it now, like, there's also the whole thing where they cut to, like, the wife.
The wife and the other wife,
and they're like, having, like, a connection. Instantly.
They both know that one knows that her husband is dead, and the other one knows that her husband is metaphorically dead.
Yeah. It's weird. It's because that, I mean, that's so not Meyer, you know?
What, because there's a supernatural component?
Yeah.
I don't think that's fundamentally not Meyer.
I mean, when else has he used a supernatural component? I can't think of a single time.
Well, supernatural components, I mean, do I have to bring up Asimov? I mean, you can say that any sufficiently advanced technology is magic. And so magic being present in present day, you know, Earth, or in, you know, Victorian Earth, I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, like, it's unexplained, but it's not so unreasonable to say that there are unexplained phenomena that we would call supernatural.
Okay. I mean, perhaps you're right, but that to me seems like something that Meyer wouldn't touch. And another thing, which, you know, we were talking about the child slave labor in Temple of Doom and stuff like that, and there's a kid in this movie, you know, who's working with the, you know, his dad or whatever is, you know, a thuggy, and they're like, oh, we're going to bring you on the hunt. And
oh, God, that, I forgot about that kid.
Is it just me, or was that like the creepiest kid in the world? Like, he freaked me out.
I just thought the entire situation was incredibly creepy. Not just the kid, because the kid looked like a girl.
Yeah, he did. He looked like a girl, but also, like, the way that he sort of, like, all of his, like, mannerisms and everything was like he was, like, trying to, like,
seduce the audience.
Yeah,
and the way that all of his lines are 80 yard.
I didn't notice that, but
oh, okay. Maybe I'm getting him confused with the other creepy kid from a movie with Thuggy in it.
No, maybe I don't know,
because that seems to be a weird trend.
It was very strange. So what did you guys think of Pierce Brosnan in this movie? I think the only other thing that I've seen him in, which was earlier than this, was John McTiernan's first movie, Nomads. What did you think about him, Marcel?
Yeah, I thought he did a very good job. The levels of what interested me was the absurdity of him going undercover, because I always thought of him as, like, the whitest person ever. But he managed to play it well. So on one level, it was ridiculous seeing him in that brown makeup, but he managed to carry it through.
Yeah, that's something that Meyer talks about in his book too. Like, you know, the first time he met Brosnan, he was like, wow, your eyes are really, really blue. We're definitely going to have to do something about that. And I think the studio wanted, like, an American or something. I forget who they said. But they wanted, like, an American for the role, and Meyer was like, okay.
Bruce Willis. He's a good choice.
Yeah. And Meyer was like, okay, we're already going to have to, you know, play with the idea of, you know,
a British guy wearing
brown makeup.
Being taller than everyone else.
Yeah.
And somehow blending into the crowd.
And it's going to be hard for the audience to buy that, but then to add another layer on top of it where you have, like, a star that the audience knows is American playing a British guy, playing an Indian guy, that's not going to work. So he kind of insisted.
Little Buddha.
Yeah. So he kind of insisted.
Worked there.
I've never seen it.
Really?
No.
That's great.
But, yeah, I think Brosnan definitely worked.
Hussein. Oh, yeah. Hussein lived in the book.
Hussein lived in the book?
Yeah.
Okay. You know about the book?
I know a little bit about the book.
Yeah.
I know that
He's the one who got shot, right?
Yeah.
He's the one who got shot off the horse? Yeah.
Apparently the author's son wrote a book where Hussein showed up.
A sequel?
No. Just another book kind set, of set in the near future of the narrative, and not really a sequel, just same area. And Hussein showed up.
So kind of like Han in Better Tomorrow, and then later in Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift.
No. Not like that.
Okay. All right, if you say so. But, well, that's cool.
Because I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
So there could be like a spinoff of this at some point.
Yeah, the Adventures of Hussein.
And then there could be a prequel.
The Young Adventures of Hussein.
Where he meets a young William Savage, maybe played by Daniel Craig, who finds some dinosaur bones.
Where okay. did you get your Kali-infused sugar?
I don't know. You know, whatever. Apparently, Brosnan and Meyer became really good friends during the making of this movie. I guess their two families would hang out quite a bit, you know, while shooting. And then...
I can see that. Brosnan seems like a cool guy.
Yeah.
Every time, you know, people talk about working with him, they're like, yeah, he's just a guy.
Mm-hmm.
Super famous, ridiculously handsome, very likable.
Yeah. And not to bring things, you know, down or whatever, but in the book he also talks about how a few years later the two of them bonded over the fact that both of their wives died.
Way to bring it down.
And they became even closer friends at that point. So, well, any final thoughts on The Deceivers, Marcelo?
Again, I enjoyed it. I guess almost purely on a schlock level, you know, seeing Pierce Brosnan in Indian makeup and the bizarre scenes of him basically playing Serpico in the 1900s India. It made for an entertaining like 100 minutes. So, and yeah, I mean, I guess yeah, they should have been, I guess, truer to like. The history, not it's very. This was very almost TV movie quality, in terms of the historical lessons you're supposed to take away from it. So if it were more in depth, I'd say it would be a better movie. But so far, it's just entertaining enough to see, basically, remaking Serpico. So, yeah, right. That's how I see it.
All right, cool, Max.
I to take it back to the Victorian England and India thing. I mean, like I've always had an interest in that sort of weird era, because I mean it's kind of, you know, proto Weyland-Yutani, and it always interested me to you know imagine that like India was actually ruled by a company, and that was very interesting, and I always wondered what that looked like on the ground level. What did it look like when a corporation ran a country? And anytime I got to see, you know, like just the aesthetics of what it looked like, it's fascinating. And that I was interested in. I was interested in like how that worked, but that kind of ended about 10 minutes into the movie, and it became a different thing. And at that point, I sort of lost a significant amount of interest. But seeing a really weird take on a guy goes undercover into a bunch of bad guys' operation and like learns the ins and outs of the system, and then you know begins the process of taking them down. From this point of view, I would way rather see a movie this weird than another damn cop joins a gang movie.
Yeah, on that aspect is actually interesting. You know,
yeah,
having this setting. Yeah, you know.
Like I don't really care if like you know The Departed is well made. I've seen it before. I've seen it a bunch of times. At least change the way it looks. At least give them weird accents and have a bunch of short guys with beards. At least do that.
Yeah, you know, I hadn't even thought about the Serpico connection until you guys brought it up, but it does...
I was thinking of Departed. Serpico feels a little bit...
You know, I mean, whatever, that idea, that makes, you know, total sense, and I kind of wish I would have thought about that while watching the movie, because I think I probably would have appreciated it more, because I really do like that, you know, sort of genre-bending stuff. You know, and that's cool. I mean, I don't know. I wonder if that was in, you know, Nicholas Meyer's mind when he was making the movie, because it does make a lot of sense.
It's interesting that, like, the book was written before that entire genre of films
yeah.
was really a thing.
Yeah.
And that became, like, its own real crime genre, the undercover cop whose loyalties get questioned by the gang who he's come to appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a thing. Yeah. Now you can, like, rattle off a list of those movies within, you know, like, 30 seconds. And when it was written, that wasn't really a thing. But the idea that making a movie that exists, you know, after that genre exists, you've got to learn from that. And I think it definitely does, like, recognize those, like, I guess tropes of that genre and deals with them the way they would be dealt with if it was, you know, company rule India.
Mm-hmm. On the whole, you know, like I said, I wasn't very impressed with this movie. I think that, you know, what we're seeing, there's kind of like I don't know. There's weird, like, waves to Meyer's career. You know, like the first three movies that he did, you know, Time After Time, Wrath of Khan, and Day After were all really solid, despite being really different movies. And then starting with Volunteers and now this, it seems like we're getting into a slump. I haven't watched Company Business yet, but I know that he's not a fan of that movie. And I think that coming out of Company Business, then we're into, you know, Star Trek VI and Vendetta. I haven't seen Vendetta either, but he says that that's his best work. So it's weird. It's almost like in the middle of his career, he just kind of took a sort of a dive, and now he's about to come back up. But I think this is kind of...
I think if in the middle of a filmmaker's dive, they make an incredibly unique guy goes undercover film,
mm-hmm.
you can't really say that that's a slump.
I mean,
because that is so weird and so different that just on the novelty alone, you've got to give some points.
I guess so. Well, Marcelo, where can people find you?
On Twitter, at Framed Panda. I'm there, I guess, a lot of my time. A lot of my hours of the day are spent there. And also, I'm trying my best to bring back my Die Hard campaign, Die Hard for the National Film Registry.
Cool, yeah. We really appreciate your work on Die Hard for the National Film Registry. You're truly doing the Lord's work, so...
Yeah.
be sure to follow Marcelo on Twitter, because... I don't know, like every time I see one of his tweets, I feel like I'm reading the tweets of a kindred spirit. So, I mean, if you don't like me, then don't follow him. But yeah, I mean, yeah, I feel like I'm watching movies vicariously through Marcelo and whatnot. So, and going to the Alamo Draft House vicariously through Marcelo, which I'm really jealous of. As always, you can find us at commentarytrackstars.com, where we do our other show, or you can find us on Twitter at ComTrackStars, or email us at ComTrackStars@gmail.com. Thanks again for joining us, Marcelo, and we will be back next week to talk about Company Business.
Dum-dum-dum.